open the Senate Revenue Committee. Good afternoon. I don't see Rob Douglas. It's his birthday today. He's usually in here on the disconnect bill. We're going to do Senate Bill 721st at work session. And Ways and Means has requested the bill. It doesn't have a referral to Ways and Means, but they've requested it. So we'll send it to Ways and Means.
Let's hold it hostage. We're in the chair.
We're in the economy. We want to send those requests down there. I think we'll give them what they want.
Do we have a dash one?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, open a work session on Senate Bill 720. Recognize Senator Farioli.
Move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 720.
Senator Farioli has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 720. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman, move the Senate Bill 720 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 720 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Really appreciated the testimony that we had about a week ago from community colleges across the state of Oregon. This is a critical bill to getting important projects done. And so this is the capital side. You heard about an hour ago about the operational side, so at least we can provide you with at least some
empty buildings.
Some welcome good news in terms of the capital side. Further, Tara, please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
It's called the neutron bill.
Aye.
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 People are gone.
It is an aye. Passes.
I have to go to another committee meeting. Can I have a 2-second head start on the community college presidents, please?
You can.
We'll reopen the hearing on
Saturday. To hold them up. Thank you. Congratulations, community colleges. Good luck on your budget. Open a.
We need to close the hearing.
Okay.
Close the work session on.
You're
Bell
going on down to Ways and Means right now, right?
Yeah. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2186.
Oh, this is the disconnect.
Elizabeth.
Chairman Deckard and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin-Maharth, Legislative Revenue Office. Let me begin by just kind of pointing out some of the things that you have and where it came from and stuff. So to begin with, I've given you like an Oregon Income Tax Reconnect recent history summary, and I've also given you a table on state relationships to the federal tax code, the starting points and automatic connection or date-specific connection. Then I've also given you a preliminary revenue impact statement also just to kind of give you an understanding of what connecting to the 2003 proposed Bush economic plan would be, and I have two sides to that, and I'll go through that. And then finally, just so you know that what you have is you also have the analysis of changes resulting from the recent 2000 through 2002 federal law changes. Now, this is what the CPAs went through on the House side, and then if we hear this bill again soon, the CPAs could come if you choose to go through this book. But at least you've got the information here. It goes through great detail on the different federal law changes.
So, Elizabeth, on that committee, if we want to have the CPAs in, they can't be here because it's 2 days after the 15th. If we'd like to have them in next week, it looks like we're going to have to make a minor change to this bill.
It's after the 15th. I don't know. I could understand it, but before the 15th.
I think we should just have Mr. Douglas explain it all. I mean, you know, he's here in the building. He said he did
happy,
his tax.
Happy birthday.
They're on vacation.
So if that is something you would like, let us know, and we will schedule a presentation on this next week.
Yeah, so Senator Deckard, at least you guys have this to begin with to look over, and then if you have further questions and want that analysis, then they can do that. So basically, I'm just going to go through some of these major points. To begin with Federal Reconnect, because that's what House Bill 2186 is, dealing with the Federal Reconnect. And with orientation, we talked about how Oregon's taxable income is being based directly on federal taxable income as defined by the Internal Revenue Code. So having a connection to the federal taxable income makes it easier then for taxpayers and businesses to carry out many of the tax calculations from the federal tax return, because they can carry over many of those calculations and then just bring them to the Oregon tax return. This really does simplify then the tax system for taxpayers and the Department of Revenue. Now, since 1997, current law has had a rolling reconnect, which basically means we have a continuous connection to federal definition of taxable income. It includes both income definition as well as federal itemized deductions. And that's real important to keep in mind. And also, any changes that we are going to be seeing now in federal law, any definition changes to taxable income or deductions will get automatically incorporated into Oregon law. That's the way current law is. Now, prior to 1997 in Oregon, we did have a date-specific connection to the Internal Revenue Code. Now, so since 97, you can see in 98 we had some minor changes and stuff in the tax law, but really the reductions in 98 and 99 weren't much, only like $1 million in 2001-03 biennium, and a reduction in 99 of $1 million in 01-03 biennium. Now, really, the major changes as far as reductions in Oregon's income taxes from federal law changes have really begun in 2001 and 2002. There was the Community Renewal Tax Relief Act of 2000, and again, this is all well documented, all the components of that in the CPA's analysis. But basically, due to our automatic connection to the tax base, there was a reduction then from those bills of roughly $21 million in the 01-03 biennium and $27 million in the 03-05. And then in 2001, basically with the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001, the connection to that bill reduced Oregon's taxes by an estimated $21 million in 2001-03 due to those reductions in taxable income, but we also have federal feedback effects, and this is via the federal tax subtraction, so it also increased revenues by an estimated $61 million. So there was a net increase then in 2001 of $40 million in the 01-03 revenues. And then in 2002, there was the Job Creation and Worker Assistance Act of 2002. And basically, the major component of 2002 reform was the 30% bonus depreciation allowance that was allowed for certain depreciable properties that were placed in service between October 10th, 2001 and September 11th of 2004. So basically, this table there shows you that in 01-03, we had a reduction of $105 million and a reduction of $69 million in 03-05 biennium and 05-07, positive of $71 million. And the reason why you're seeing that positive there from the bonus depreciation is because you were taking more of your depreciation up front, and then in the future years, you wouldn't have as much depreciation to claim on your income taxes. So you do see then a positive in the future. So we have connected to all of these changes in federal law so far. These have all been incorporated into the current revenue forecast, and that's important for you to keep in mind, too, because when we see future changes, like with the bonus depreciation, we were seeing those changes go on in 2002. We were having to, you know, transfer our analysis of what we saw as, you know, the revenue impact from a bonus depreciation change to OEA, and then they look at it and incorporate it into their forecast. So recognize that all these federal law changes do become a part of our current law forecast. Now, to just kind of briefly help everyone see, you know, with where we kind of stand right now with our connection to the federal taxable income. On this table three here, this comes from the National Council of State Legislatures from one of their recent 2002 surveys. And basically what you see from this is that Oregon is one of six states that has an automatic federal taxable income connection. And really, out of those six states, three of them, Rhode Island, Vermont, and North Dakota, all prior to 2001, these three states connected to federal tax liability. And this was even an even stricter connection to federal law than even federal taxable income. Because with federal tax liability, you would see then your revenues at the state level rise and fall with changes then in those federal tax rates. So that's what you saw then in North Dakota, Rhode Island, and Vermont when they started seeing in 2001 the real large reductions then in the Bush Economic Stimulus Package to reduce tax rates at the federal level. So those three states converted then to having their starting point being federal taxable income. And again, federal taxable income, starting there, you add in deductions as well as a definition of income. Where if you start down here at federal adjusted gross income, you don't connect then to deductions that are occurring at the federal level. You just connect to the definition of federal income. And as you can see there, there's 17 states that connect to federal adjusted gross income automatically, then additional 9 states that are date specific. And as far as the federal taxable income, there are 5 states that would be date specific. So like in this proposal with House Bill 2186, we would move, Oregon would move from being automatically connected to federal taxable income to moving over here to the other 5 states of Hawaii, Idaho, Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota being 6 states then that are date certain, but you are connecting to federal taxable income. And then you can see there's 5 states that have no federal starting point at all, and then 7 states that have no personal income tax. But that's just to kind of give you a bit of a reference point for other states and how they're dealing also with some of these changes in federal law. Now, I just wanted to briefly go through some of the components of the 2003 proposed Bush economic plan. And what I'm going to be going through are mainly the key parts because, you know, there's just, you know, quite a large number of changes. But some of the major ones are important to just keep in mind. And also, this is really preliminary. This is based on joint committee taxation estimates, but these are of the House version. And we know that the Senate has made revisions to the House version, and they're now in negotiation. So
we have a copy of that.
Mr. Chairman, I can sure give this to you, but this is really from orientation,
okay. And
I just, you know, printed it out again, but I can sure give it to you again if you'd like, and we've got some, I kind of was expanding on this too to incorporate a few other things that we have in this analysis anyway. So I'm just trying to give you some of the background on what are behind these numbers in your table that you'll be looking at in just a second. So the first major component of the Bush proposed economic recovery plan is that elimination of the double taxation on dividends. So basically, as we talked about during orientation, if a corporation distributes after-tax earnings and profits as a dividend to then their shareholders, and the shareholders then pay income tax on the dividends, that's where you get the double taxation. So the proposal really is to allow shareholders to then exclude that dividend component to the extent that it was taxed at the corporate level. So that's the major component that causes the largest reduction because, again, dividends are a component of income. At the federal level, they are a component of income at our Oregon state level. So the minute you remove dividends from the base, then it's a direct reduction then in the amount of income that we can tax here in Oregon. Okay, then you also have a portion of all these, the 2001 economic growth package, the stimulus package of Bush. And so that, you know, we have several components which all reduce federal tax liability at the federal level. And the first one being like accelerating the 10% federal tax bracket. So basically for singles, it's currently at $6,000 at tax, the 10% tax bracket. It goes up to $7,000. And for married couples, it's now at $12,000. It's going up to $14,000. And also we are accelerating then the reduction in the income tax rate. So those income tax rates, again, they were scheduled to reduce, but we're just accelerating all that. So basically it goes to be reduced to 25%, 28%, 33%, and 35% beginning in 2003. And you also have an acceleration of the reduction of the marriage penalty. And again, that's just increasing the size of the 15% income bracket so that it's equal to, for joint returns to be twice that of single returns.
Senator Hanna.
Mr. Chairman, Elizabeth is in the limitations that the federal has put in place. Are there other limitations that are going to apply to Oregon in a secondary role as far as impacting taxes on other deductions because of these deductions that were taken?
Well, Senator Hannon, yeah, I think you can, you know, I think some of these components with deductions feed through to our state level, say like the college savings plan and stuff. You know, we are connected with, you know, their federal laws connected with that savings plan. So as you see changes in that, then you would be seeing changes fill through to Oregon. So if they increase the amount you could deduct for that program, then that would mean that we would also have those same amount of deductions. So the ones I'm talking about right now are dealing with the tax liability at the federal level, which feeds through to Oregon by the federal tax subtraction. Now that feeds through.
Is there any possibility that as we try to disconnect from the federal tax code, that we do any extenuating damage to Oregon taxpayers that we don't intend? A kind of an unintended consequence.
Senator Hannon, I think the thing to that we tried to incorporate into this bill, and I'll discuss that a little bit later, but we tried to maintain that connection with federal law for depreciation, and then also for all the pension plans, savings accounts and stuff, and college saving plans, deferred comp and things. And so all of those are connected to, we would still maintain our rolling reconnect, because those are issues in federal tax that make it quite hard to disconnect from, because then you would have to keep two sets of books, one at the federal level and one at the state level for the different deduction amounts. So we try to think about what kind of things were going to be affecting the, you know, basis, and then any depreciation schedules and stuff that you would need to keep. And so we try to think of different incidences in which disconnecting from federal tax law would make it difficult for taxpayers, and then we try to still maintain that connection.
Okay, thank you.
Good. So just stand on that, because I've been curious about that. So how confident are that we got that exhaustive list? You know, whatever's out there, the college savings plan, bonus depreciation, others. I guess you can't be certain, but how certain can we be that we really did get, so there are no unintended?
Yeah, Chairman Deckard, I think, you know, we did have Department of Revenue, you know, involved with that, and I know Deborah can probably speak to that in more detail as far as how much she surveyed her, you know, different, you know, auditors and whatnot to get information from them. But and also I think if you did have the CPAs in, that's something that you could also, you know, discuss with them if there are other things that they could think of, because I don't know that we surveyed all the CPA group and stuff with that issue. But that was the intent of the House side anyway, was to really try to minimize the amount of disturbance that there would be for businesses or for taxpayers and being able to maintain their taxes. So other components of the Bush plan was basically to also increase that federal child care credit by $400. It's currently at $600. It's going to increase it right away to $1,000. Also increasing the business expensing threshold, and this is something that you've probably been hearing about, but under current law, you have $179 expensing for property that you have purchased recently. That is limited right now at $25,000. What this proposal would do is then increase that amount to $75,000, and then also increase the total dollar amount in which you have a phase out then of that from $200,000 to $325,000 for property that's placed in service in 2003. So all these changes are taking place in 2003 too, so they are coming about quite quickly. Now, other deductions that are also incorporated in these estimates are dealing with tax-free withdrawals from IRAs for charitable contributions. So basically, under current law, if you have an amount that's withdrawn from a traditional IRA And it is donated to a charitable organization. Taxes are then assessed on those withdrawals. So this proposal would provide an exclusion then from that tax that would be collected for taxable IRAs that are withdrawn and that distribution is then made to a charitable organization. Also, we see a deduction for out-of-pocket classroom expenses incurred by teachers. This is providing an above-the-line deduction, which means that both people who itemize as well as standardized deductions can receive this deduction. This proposal is, under current law, teachers are allowed $250 for their expenses incurred for educational costs. This would increase it to $400. We also, there's an above-the-line deduction for long-term care insurance premiums, and so that's also increased. There's another big component of this is an expansion of the tax-free savings opportunities. So under current law, there's a maximum amount that's allowed to be deducted and stuck to a traditional IRA each year. And what this is going to do is increase that deduction, and it's going to replace IRAs with two different savings vehicles, one being the lifetime savings accounts and the second being the retirement savings accounts. And the contributions are not deducted, are not deductible at the time you're making contributions, but the earnings on the contributions are not taxable when distributed. So that's the major difference, is that you basically, with these new savings vehicles, all those distributions from the lifetime savings accounts are tax-free. And what this does is create in the beginning then some positive revenue for Oregon and at the federal level, because you're going to see then some additional tax that comes in at the time you convert these IRAs to then these lifetime savings accounts. And another component of this, which we have addressed in the bill, is electronic filers. So there is an issue where the federal government is going to allow electronic filers to have an time extension of 15 days, so you don't have to file by April 15th, you could file by April 30th. And so that's addressed in the bill as far as giving Department of Revenue rules to deal with that. So as far as the kind of some preliminary numbers of the revenue reduction and things from connecting to this Bush plan, on the House side, what you see is you have that increase in the expensing for businesses. That involves in basically 2003-04, $6.2 million reduction in revenue. Then you would see that on personal income tax side, though, you're going to be seeing the elimination of the double taxation of dividends, which would be a reduction of $76.6 million. And then you see other provisions, and the other provisions are those things I was just going through with deductions, dealing with the above-the-line deduction for long-term care insurance, the tax-free IRA withdrawals for charity, above-the-line teacher costs, and then there's an expansion of tax-free savings opportunities. So the other provisions actually in 03-04 fiscal year cause a positive impact to Oregon of basically $748,000. So this is the result of those tax savings opportunities that would exist from converting IRAs to these tax-free lifetime savings accounts. So what you see as a net result then is the changes affecting taxable income then would be a reduction of $82.1 million in 03-04 fiscal year. But then what you see is, like I was saying, there's all these various proposals to reduce the federal tax liability. That feeds through to Oregon as a positive increase in Oregon's taxable income because there's less of a subtraction on the federal deduction. So the personal income taxes would go up by $19.5 million. So the net result for 03-04 is roughly $68.9 million reduction, and for the 03-05 biennium, it's a reduction in both corporate and personal income tax of $143.9 million in lost revenue if the Bush plan goes into effect, you know, like the House version. And 05-07 biennium is $189.98 million, and 07-09, $250.7 million. So this is just basic preliminary estimates as far as what we know so far about the House version.
Could we roughly half those, since the Senate, U.S. Senate version is about half? Would it be correct if we just roughly cut those figures in half?
Yeah, Senator Deckard, it really does depend on, I'm feeling like maybe it was we're halving like the dividends and stuff component, and I would think in that sense then we might, you know, be able to look at the dividends as being halved. I don't know what if the other component is like in the feedback effect, you know, in terms of if they're not accelerating all these different federal rates at the same level that they are anticipating in the original House proposal. So until, you know, you really see something, I don't know that you can really say we can just, you know, cut it in half. So it kind of depends on where, you know, they're making those changes. Yeah. So what I did, though, is just from the House plan, then I just looked at, because like we were talking about with the bill, we tried to incorporate still an automatic connection to certain components of the, you know, proposed plan so that these components would make it easier for taxpayers and businesses to keep records with their income taxes. So as you can see with the corporate income tax, we would keep depreciation with the rolling reconnect. So you would see the 179 expensing increased. And then if you saw that, then you would still see the 6.2 million reduction in 03-04. And then you'd also see on the personal income tax side, since we would be connecting with all those different issues with the tax savings alternatives and the opportunities that are there, then you would be seeing an increase then in taxes here in Oregon from those changes and connecting to those changes. So roughly you would see with depreciation changes plus the IRA and pension plans, it would be an increase of $5 million in the 03-04 fiscal year. And then again, if you assume that these the tax rates were reduced at the same level that we're assuming here in the House plan, you would still see that $19.5 million feedback effect from, again, the lower federal tax subtraction that you'd be getting here in Oregon. So what you're getting basically in the 03-05 biennium from kind of a partial disconnect and partial connection with certain elements, you would see here then a total tax increase in the 03-05 biennium of $43 million, in the 05-07 biennium of $30.6 million, and $16.7 million in the 07-09 biennium. I think the important point to keep in mind is, you know, we don't know exactly where those different cuts would come or if all these feedback effects would come into play because we don't know exactly what changes may occur with it. But just so you're clear, with the bill and the intent, anyway, of House Bill 2186 was to keep a rolling reconnect with depreciation, so you would see the increase in the expense in for other small businesses, and also to keep the rolling reconnect with all the different pension plans, the savings accounts, the deferred comp, and so those would lead then to a positive impact for Oregon to begin with. Eventually, as you can see there in 2007-08 fiscal year, you would then start to see a reduction then of 1.2 million in the 2007-08 fiscal year. So there are reductions in the future from these tax savings opportunities, but to begin with, due to the conversion of the different IRAs to these tax savings accounts, then you would be seeing an increase in taxes. Now, if you want, I can just briefly go through the bill itself. And so basically with the bill, the way it started, it was just the reconnect bill in which the CPAs were going to go through their book. And so it basically is establishing the connection date of December 31st, 2002, to the Internal Revenue Code for Oregon tax law, including the definition of taxable income. And so that's what the House brought in with amendments, was also making a date certain of December 31st, 2002 for definitions of taxable income. It continues then the rolling reconnect to federal law for certain elements of taxable income, the deferred compensation plans, the pension, employee stock ownership, deferred compensation, the individual retirement plans, medical savings accounts, educational IRAs, qualified tuition savings accounts, or other tax-exempt savings programs. So, you know, it does have pretty broad language. Even at the end, they're saying other tax-exempt savings programs. And then under this act, then distributions to employees from deferred compensation plans will be treated as pension income, not wages, and it is effective for distributions made after December 31st, 2001. Now, I bolded that statement there about how right now, the way the bill reads, due to an error in drafting, we, Department of Revenue found that, you know, we basically are not connected to rolling reconnect for depreciation like we thought we were on the House side. So basically, this does disconnect from the rolling reconnect pertaining to depreciation and expensing depreciable assets for federal law changes occurring between January 1st, 2003 and December 31st, 2005. So basically that is something that was not, you know, known at the time we went through the House side. It's something we, you know,
that's
will be addressing.
That's not that big of a deal. We can just, you know, I don't think anyone really cares about bonus depreciation.
Okay, so it also is a... It, basically, with this bill and what the CPAs would do each year, you know, with the Reconnect bill, is just come in and describe all the different changes to the Internal Revenue Code that have come about from federal law changes. And so basically with this now, if you adopt a bill like House Bill 2186 with a disconnect, then each year the CPAs still come back, but they will also then go into greater detail about what kind of changes took place at the federal level that affect taxable income as well as all the other components that aren't captured with taxable income. So this bill basically started out capturing all the other components that don't deal with taxable income. And so you'll even notice when you go through the CPA book, they distinguish between, in their different sections, between the federal law changes that affect taxable income and those federal law changes that don't affect taxable income, but still were changes that are needing to be addressed in the book. They're addressed in the book, and they need to be addressed in the bill. So basically with that, you've got, it's deleting the reference to the Internal Revenue Code as in effect on June 8, 2001 in several locations. It's also dealing with the refunds due to taxpayers due to a retroactive treatment contained in this act for tax years beginning before January 1, 2003 shall be made without interest. It's clarifying that the compensation paid to non-residents under certain conditions is not considered taxable income in Oregon beginning tax year 1999. It reestablishes then, and this is an important other component of this bill, is that we had an amendment, and there's a component in here to reestablish the rolling reconnect for changes in federal law pertaining to taxable income for federal law changes after December 31st, 2005. So basically what this is saying is that, you know, right now we have the rolling reconnect. That would stop, and so we would establish December 31st, 2002 as a connection date, but with the exception of those pensions and all the others, which will still keep the rolling reconnect. But then what happens is that then in 2005, when the legislature comes back in session again, you will come and have an analysis from the CPA. They will go through and all the different federal law changes, and you can decide at that time whether or not what provisions you want to connect to from federal law changes. And then you also can decide at that time whether you want to have the rolling reconnect then in the future. And this is basically saying all through 2005, all those federal law changes that would occur in 2005, you wouldn't be automatically rolling reconnecting with. But any changes that then would occur in 2006, yes, you would be automatically rolling reconnecting with those. Because it's reestablishing the rolling reconnect for federal law changes after 2006.
So it requires this body to reconvene on this question.
Yes. So you can address this question again next session if you so choose, or if you don't do anything at all and you just have, again, a bill from the CPAs which, you know, deal with taxable, you know, issues with the connection date for issues not pertaining to taxable income, then you would have an automatic rolling reconnect for any federal law changes after December 31st, 2005. But you will have enough time in the 2005 session to decide what you would like to do with that issue. And then so the final point with the bill is it provides the Department of Revenue with rulemaking authority to prescribe then a different Oregon tax date for electronic filers if the federal government extends that federal tax due date beyond April 15th, and that's just one of the components of the Bush bill, and Department of Revenue identified that, that they had, you know, rulemaking authority to be able to extend that. So basically with the bill itself, since we have not seen any federal law changes since December 31st, 2002, you know, this has a no revenue impact right now, but we all know that it, the federal law changes could be coming down, you know, quite soon. So,
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Thank you. Could you speak just a little bit more about the importance of any effectiveness of the date? You said that this goes back to was it December 31st, 2002? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any time constraint by which we must get this passed relative to the Bush plan?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, I think you know, basically the issue is this is a no revenue impact right now.
Right now, right.
But that's the minute a Bush plan is signed into law, then we have automatic rolling reconnect, and then this would be a revenue raising bill.
That's what I thought. And so what is the potential timeline back in Congress on the negotiations on the...
I don't know. Paul wants to...
I mean, is there...
We've been... I spoke with Wyden's legislative or chief of staff, and they said they would give us a 10-day... They're in recess right now.
I see.
It could happen relatively quickly. We learned, what, a week and a half ago that it could happen very quickly. But we do have... we thought we might have this right before us and have to move quickly if we're going to do it. That is not the case. We at least have a week.
Senator Ringo, we've been in contact with NCSL and the Washington person there, and basically they are on two-week Easter recess. What they've been negotiating with between the House and Senate is a target. It's kind of like a co-chair's target or something. So, and they've been unable to reach agreement on that. Once they reach agreement on that, then they give it to the equivalent of their revenue chairs to work through the details of it. So we wouldn't be connected until the president signed it. Now, as the chair pointed out, we have found out, particularly in the case of the bonus depreciation, we had, you know, all the word we got is it's dead, no way it's going to pass, and then it's amended on the Senate floor and passed very quickly. So it can change fast, but I think right now we have at least through next week before they're coming back into session, so probably at least another week after that. But as Elizabeth pointed out, as soon as that gets signed into law, then it changes your rules here, making it a three-fifths vote if it's a revenue raiser.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannah.
Well, Paul is there. Does this require a three-fifths vote?
Senator Hannon, right now it does not require a three-fifths vote because it does not raise revenue under current law.
But as Elizabeth just explained, if Congress changes it, then it becomes a revenue-raising measure. So then do we need three-fifths regardless in anticipation of a future action by Congress? I guess that's my next question. I mean, we can say it takes a simple majority, 16 to pass it, but does it take three-fifths because of what might in fact happen at the congressional level?
Well, as you know, Senator, the three-fifths constitutional change have been around since 95, so we, you know, there hasn't been a lot of tests of it, but the advice we've gotten from counsel is that under current law, there isn't a revenue impact. So we don't have the three-fifths language associated with the relating clause. So it is not a bill for revenue raising under current law. It would become a bill to raise revenue if Congress acts and something like the bonus or the dividend exclusion is in that, then it becomes a revenue raising bill. So we don't need the three-fifths until we have some change at the federal level.
Let me try to rephrase my question. I think we're talking along the same lines, but we're somehow not making connection here. Can somebody come back at a later date and make a constitutional challenge that because of an action at the federal level, there was no three-fifths vote in the Oregon legislature, so therefore it doesn't apply. Well, let me ask you that.
Senator, I think someone could make that challenge. As I said, with 95 is the time period we've actually had this in the Constitution, so we haven't had a long period of time, and I see someone more legally versed than I coming here. So
His Highness is here.
How about that? Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. Okay. The question, as I understand it, is the bill a bill for raising revenue? Because there may be some changes that Congress is contemplating.
Right.
And with the caveat that I think Paul mentioned, that there has not been a court case on this three-fifths requirement, so we aren't certain as to what it means. But with that caveat, my opinion is the answer is no. Because there's always going to be, no one can predict the future, there's always going to be uncertainty as to what Congress is going to do. And this is a requirement that, a procedural requirement for the legislature to meet when it acts. So it seems to me you have to look at the actual state of the law at the time the legislature acts. If Congress hasn't done something yet, you don't know what Congress is going to do. You look at what the federal law is on the date the legislature acts, the Oregon legislature acts.
Okay, so I assume you've been watching the program here today because your expeditious arrival here in the room. So I'd like to ask you a question. I'm a taxpayer. And I filed a tax return in 2004 based upon this 2003 bill. And Congress takes a turn at the station and adopts a different deduction schedule. And I filed my income tax, and my taxes is audited. What safeguard do I have that I somehow haven't fallen through the cracks and I have to pay back a penalty provision based upon an action that was taken by the legislature in 2003 that was filed on my 2004 income taxes that was audited in 2005? You understand where I'm coming from?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, actually, no.
Okay. I filed my taxes. Well, let's allow the 2003 legislature enacts this bill to have this rolling disconnect. In 2004, I filed my income taxes, my business deductions, based upon the schedule that I assume are in place, based upon actions that the 2003 legislature did.
Mm-hmm.
2005, my taxes are audited, and it is assumed that Congress took a different course of action. And my taxes are audited, and then I find out that I wasn't on the right deduction scale. And I'm using this because my CPA in Ashland, as an example, is totally frustrated with the Oregon legislature, always mandating what connects and disconnects and reconnects and what connects. He has to maintain two sets of books for his clients.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't understand the nightmare that a client goes through in filing a federal tax deduction on the assumption that a state tax deduction is disconnected at the time. And then Congress takes an action out here somewhere Does it apply retroactively?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannan, that would depend on the choices that the 2005 legislature would make. That's the design of this bill. If they did nothing and Congress acts in 2005, I think there are some assumptions you have to make about congressional action. Whatever legislation they would pass would, just like we do, have a set of tax years that it would apply to. Do you have a...
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannan, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Senator Hannan, I understand, I think, what you're asking. We have had that situation in the past. In the early 1980s, the legislature disconnected from its what was then automatic conformity or roll and reconnect, which you have had for a number of years because of the economy. You disconnected, you fixed a date certain for the definition of taxable income, just as House Bill 2186 would do.
2186 now reconnects everything in 2006, as I understand the bill.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannan, you're correct.
And that's what we did back in 1980s, in the 80s when we disconnected. And there were some people that fell through the system at the time.
Senator Hannan, you're correct. You did that from the early 80s until you went back to an automatic conformity in 1997. So for that 15-year period, taxpayers were doing what this bill would have them do, which is... You fill out your return based on federal law as it's in effect on a date certain. In this case, it would be December 31, 2002.
Okay.
You look at the federal law that was in effect then. If Congress passes something in 2003 that we are not connected to, you make an adjustment on your Oregon return. If the legislature comes in 2005 and retroactively picks up those changes, then yes, you file an amended return and you use that new federal law. You may pay more tax without penalty or interest, or you may receive a refund, also without penalty and I believe without interest. So that situation existed for 15 years in Oregon until you did the automatic conformity in 97.
Okay. I've been down this road before, Mr. Chairman, and my CPA doesn't fail to remind me every 4 years when I run for re-election, and he serves as my campaign treasurer, and he reminds me, are you going to screw up my practice again? So I want to make sure I'm not doing it again.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
I wonder if he got that kind of pressure before income taxes.
He's always been a tax-paying citizen.
I mean, before they even had income taxes.
Mr. Chair, what does add to the complication of a disconnection, what Senator Hannan's recalling, the early 80s, we disconnect from the depreciation schedule. So if you buy an asset in 1982 under a different depreciation schedule, you have to keep track of that over the entire life of the asset, which could be a long period of time. So just 1 year or 2 years being disconnected on depreciation can have effects well into the future.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannan, let me make one other point on your question. Now that I finally understand it, you were concerned about retroactively having to pay interest.
Right.
Yeah. There actually is a provision in the bill, Section 23, Subsection 3B of the bill, that says if there is one of these retroactive changes, that interest is not paid, either for if a refund is due or if there's a deficiency assessed.
Okay. So all they would do then, according to Deborah, is file an amended return. Okay. I just want to make sure that I've been down that road before and I've been burnt and don't want to repeat the history.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannan, there would be an amended return if the 05 legislature makes retroactive changes. If you don't do that, there wouldn't be any amended return.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Thank you. Dexter, any chance that, I mean, the calculation on whether we need a three-fifths vote would be not based on at the time we vote, but when the law becomes effective?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, there is a chance of that. There certainly is a risk of that. This is the three-fifths vote is a new provision. There's never been a court case on it. It's my interpretation that because it is really a procedural requirement that the legislature must meet, it seems to me that it's more relevant as to what the state of the law is when the legislature acts, not when the bill actually takes effect, because it's the action of the legislature that is the subject of the requirement.
Mr. Chair, you're probably right, but as you said, there's no court case. It just makes me wonder. This did get three-fifths in the House, and it just makes me wonder whether we ought to ensure three-fifths in the Senate.
Just a comment for the committee.
That was a question I was trying to
ask. What's that?
That's a question I was trying to ask earlier, too. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Has the three-fifths survived the Armada challenge?
You can't take emergency.
Mr. Chair, I don't think there's been an Armada challenge on that basis. It was a legislative referral in the first place.
Senator Starr.
As the bill, in its engrossed fashion, has a 91st day following adjournment, Sunday dies, an effective date. Is there a reason why we couldn't put any emergency clause on the bill? What's the time? What's the rationale for the timing of that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, there's another provision in the Constitution that prohibits emergency clauses on bills that regulate taxation or exemption. And this bill would certainly fall within that prohibition.
Also, we don't need it. Yes.
Deborah, did you have, you're on the list. I don't know if you want to add, subtract.
Mr. Chair, I had planned to go through the bill. I don't know that you want me to do that now. A lot of it would be rehashing what you've already heard. You have a handout, a summary section by section analysis of the bill. I guess for the record, perhaps I should just point out a couple of things. On page 3 in section 15, the language dealing with net operating losses is attempting to correct what we think perhaps was an oversight in the way the language is worded for carryback of net operating losses. So that fixes NOL carrybacks for the 2000 year. And on in section 24, there's an item that's actually not closely related to Reconnect, and it's clarifying the exemption of income that's earned by certain non-residents who have regularly assigned duties on the waterways of two states. We enacted legislation in 2001 that was intended to mirror federal legislation, and our attorneys have advised us that perhaps the Oregon law is a little bit broader than what the federal law is. So this is trying to scale that back to what the federal law provides and nothing beyond that.
Deborah, I'm sure you guys have completely vetted this, but it was kind of a question that I had for Lizbeth to ensure, you know, we had that list, and Senator Hannan was asking about this partly also, of bonus depreciation, college saving plans, other areas that we have scoured this to ensure that there's no unintended consequences. We're not going to move this afternoon, but would love to get 100% certainty or as close to it as we can get that.
Mr. Chair, I'm sure there's something that we have missed that we simply haven't thought about. We tried to consider those things that have timing differences or basis differences depreciation is a perfect example of that. The pension and retirement plans are another example where you can have different bases for federal and state if the deductions are different. Nothing else came to mind, but as sure as this goes through, there will be a taxpayer who comes forward and says, you know, what are you going to do about me?
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Rod, I'd like to comment on the Senate Revenue summary that you put together. This is the most comprehensive, understandable, layman's terms that I've seen in a long time, and I appreciate this. Everything we usually speak of is such technical nature, it floats over everyone's capability to understand, and I want to compliment you on your presentation, because I've been reading this, and for the first time in layman's terms, it's written in a form that we can understand.
Thank you, Senator. I use my husband as a test case, so if he can put him to sleep at night reading this.
He must have a higher IQ than I do.
No.
Thank you. A lot of people do, except you.
Well, we're both Irish, so I know you're not smarter than me.
I'd be happy to try to answer any questions, Senator. Otherwise, I'm not sure that there's much point in going through the bill section by section.
Yeah, unless the committee would like you to.
No.
I feel good, and I appreciate the section by section you provided.
Thank you.
I still want Rob Douglas to go through it section by section.
Yeah, we will have Mr. Douglas, since it is the day before his birthday. He will come last.
And actually, his CEO is here, too, and I think she could provide excellent information.
That's a good suggestion. We'll have both Joan and Rob go through the bill, word for word, section for section. But before we do that, Patrick Green, David Williams, and Miss Easton. Cappy Easton? Eaton, I'm sorry.
Cappy Eaton. The infamous Cappy Eaton from Lane County. The League of Women Voters champion.
We'll go ahead and go. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Patrick Green with the Oregon AFL-CIO and also a member of the Oregon Revenue Coalition. We just wanted to come forward in support of House Bill 2186A for a number of reasons, which I think you already know, and was said on the House floor by the chair of the House Revenue Committee that this is a smart, common-sense strategy to end the rolling reconnect and allows us to take control of our tax system. Particularly in the time, and one of the things that Chair Shetterly pointed out was particularly in a time when the feds are deciding to deficit spend, this is something that we obviously cannot do. I know Senator Hannan and you all know this based on when we're preparing our budget, we need a balanced budget. They don't. And it's, as Chair Shetterly put it, when states can bounce, or federal government can bounce, but states don't when it comes to deficit spending. So it allows us to take control of our tax system, we can always vote to, your able staff pointed out, we can always vote to reconnect to individual things as they come up as well. So we just wanted to express our support for House Bill 2186A.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, David Williams, Oregon School Employees Association, also a member of the Oregon Revenue Coalition. On my notes was word for word what he said. Just to add to that, of course, we all...
plagiarism.
Oh, is that... he plagiarized me, by the way. That's, watching the discussion on the floor, the presentation on the floor of the House today with the budget and the emphasis being placed on the uncertainty we have as far as the economic condition we're in with continuous declining revenue forecasts, this bill is just another step to trying to create some certainty because we don't know what exactly is going to come out of Congress as far as a tax incentive plan for the president, but it's going to be some kind of detrimental impact to the state, and we just simply can't afford it at this time, and we can't further afford the uncertainty of not knowing what it's going to be. So this is just a step in that direction of taking back control of our tax system and making sure we know what we have to deal with when we're outlining budgets for the state. Thank you.
I should just take this opportunity to point out to our committee that we've been invited to join the House Committee tomorrow at, I think, 9:30, and you've been excused.
8:30.
8:30.
It is 9:30.
Have they changed it?
So it'll be 9:30 tomorrow. We are on the floor, but we've been excused. So if you'd like to miss a vote or two on the Senate floor, because we will be in floor session, you are excused to come down here and listen to the presentation that Revenue Coalition has at 9:30 tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that it's 8:30. They're going to be work sessioning a bunch of bills, right? And so our presentation is at 9:30 after the work after they work session.
Yeah, and just to add, many of you know our program already, and it's going to be a great outline of our full proposal as it deals with tax expenditures and the way we feel we need to take a hardened look at tax expenditures as we're taking a hardened look at budget. So I hope all of you can be there for that. It'll be really enlightening.
So, Paul, some of us might be there at 9:30 tomorrow and have been excused.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Cabby Eaton, infamous from Blaine County. I'm the government coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon, and I certainly want to echo our hope that many of you can be at that presentation tomorrow morning. The League is also a member of the Revenue Coalition. Just a couple of things I want to say. For the last four sessions in the legislature and also the five special sessions, the League has been advocating for looking at all of the possible options for revenue stream in Oregon to look at our services and programs and trying to find a way in which to better serve the people of Oregon. And we feel very strongly that 2186 speaks to closing one of the loopholes that will hopefully start the restructuring of the whole Oregon tax system, but we feel that this is a beginning step to do that. And so in looking at both this bill and at the tax expenditure discussion, we feel that would get us on the way at least to stopping the hemorrhaging somewhat and moving toward looking at some kind of a possible revenue stream that will support the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Mr. Craven, Mr. Wilson, Mr. Schweinhardt.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Then we're going to get our section-by-section word-to-word analysis by the CEO of RPD.
RPD. CEO of RPD. Where is she? I don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association. I'm going to be very brief because I know this gets a little bit tedious, but I think you've had a pretty good airing of the issues involving House Bill 2186. I want to thank Senator Hannan for reminding all of us in this discussion that there's a real world out there. There's a real world of people who have to fill out tax returns, and there's a real world impact of this issue that we continue to be reminded by our clients that this is not just about here's a bill and it's worth so much in the budget balance, so let's pass it. I personally spent most of my summer and last year sort of watching this issue through five special sessions and the debate we had about the bonus depreciation and such. But there is a real world out there, and that's why many of us worked in 1997 on Rolling Reconnect, because we were continually reminded by our clients that there is a real world out there, and disconformity between state and federal returns is, you know, a royal pain. It has a cost to tax filers. In addition, we do, and appropriately in this building, focus on the so-called cost to the general fund, but there's another cost in this debate, and that's the cost of people doing double bookkeeping and amended returns and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just glad we didn't have much of that reminder. We had some of it in the House side, but it's nice to remind us all that there's something real here besides just the Oregon legislative budget balance, as important as that is. Just a couple other comments. We will continue to say and believe that what we did in 1997 was a big deal and was good from our point of view to do Rolling Reconnect. And whether we're one of six states or one of one states, it's a positive net for Oregon from the point of view of people who file returns and have to try to do tax conformity. We appreciate that changes were made in the House side to the original bill on the issues of depreciation and the issue of a sunset. And we certainly appreciate the work of the House committee in making some of those accommodations. So this wasn't just disconnect and good luck for the future, as we've done in the past. The only other issue I really want to touch here, two more quick items. One, we are wrestling with what I sort of not jokingly call phantom disconnect. The reason, even when Chair Shetterly carried this bill on the floor, he spoke on behalf of the value of having Rolling Reconnect and it's for ease of filing and all that, but, you know, raise this specter of what Congress might do. And we are in an interesting situation of, you know, trying to figure out what and when Congress might do. It was a $700 million package, and now it's a $500 million package. And as you reminded, that's just the number they're picking. The details are not done yet. Many of my people in Washington, D.C., you know, they're not sure that any major tax overhaul is going to result in this Congress. It may not. And that's what we're wrestling with, trying to score it, you know, asking your staff to say, what's the value of this bill? Because it's disconnecting from something that might happen. Pretty hard for staff to put a real number on this thing. It's maybe $143 million to the negative. Passing this version, maybe it's $43 million to the positive. We really don't know. But so I appreciate what you're wrestling with, is trying to second-guess Congress and not let Congress, quote, give away the store and its impact on your budget balance. And I know this is a difficult decision to make. And we do, like I say, we do appreciate some of the accommodations that were made in this version, I guess, as we get it corrected. I understand we require a little amendment here to make sure we do what we said we're going to do.
Do you have a preference on that or an interest? I know you have an interest. A preference. We talked before about whether we would move this bill as it is and fix any language on bonus depreciation in another bill or amend this bill before moving.
Mr. Chair, if this bill does not accomplish the intent that was expressed on the House floor, I think we ought to fix this bill. Otherwise, we've got a whole legislative history on behalf of something that may not be correct in the bill. Thank you, Senator. We should fix this. We should fix this. But I'm not sure if the fix is prepared or is ready to go.
We don't have an amendment yet.
Right. But you've got a legislative history on the House floor with the chairman of the House Revenue Committee saying what this bill does, and if it doesn't, we ought to make sure this bill does. Otherwise, we're going to have to send it back over there. And
well, anytime you change it, you're going to have to send it back. That wouldn't be the first time that you had one legislator stand up and talk about a bill, and then it got changed in another chamber.
Well, I just want to make sure what this bill does is what Chairman Shetterly said it did on the House floor. So I would argue that we need to fix it. I guess I wasn't even aware of this issue till this hearing. So, finally, I just want to put one thing out there for your consideration. Given the budget discussion this morning by the co-chairs and the presentation, I think what I heard them say on the whole issue of tax credits and tax expenditures was they're not going to budget for new money in the budget explicitly for increases in tax expenditures. I think that's what I heard Chairman Schrader say. I would at least put out for your consideration that we're doing this bill because we believe it's a net revenue gainer in the big picture. We believe that Congress may do some things that would be a big net revenue loss. That's why we're doing this bill. That's what I think. And so this bill, I guess I just want to put out for your consideration that this bill, even though it formally has a revenue impact of zero, because staff can't put a revenue impact on something because Congress hasn't done anything yet, that you consider this bill as a revenue enhancer. Not in the sense of three-fifths votes and all that, but that some credit be given to this action in consideration of other bills that you have under your consideration. So, you know, we talk about netting out, that we not do other bills unless we can, quote, pay for them. I just want to put out on the table that maybe this bill, since it appears to have a potential at least $43 million net revenue increase to the state, depending on what Congress does, of course, that some consideration be given to that net in discussion of other bills that are before your committee. Am I making any sense on what I just said? Okay.
Yeah, on everything that flows.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, that's fine. I understand.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. JL?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hannon, for the record, JL Wilson representing NFIB. I'm going to be a lot quicker than Jim. With regard to 2186, we would definitely be opposed to the bill without the reconnection back to depreciating and expensing of depreciable assets. If that's fixed in this bill, then you know we're more or less resigned that that train's left the station. The one thing I do want to say, you got to tread lightly when you talk about divorcing tax codes, because people have some nebulous notion about regulatory reform. You hear a lot about what it is to regulate a business and how businesses have a hard time complying, but they can't pinpoint it. I can pinpoint it for you. The hardest part is with tax compliance. Nothing else is really, you know, there's a distant second, but tax compliance is number one, and chief among that is keeping separate sets of books. So I just want to bring home the point, you know, this is a tax issue. It's also a regulatory issue. I just, you know, I urge you to tread lightly. I think the House accommodated us as about as well as they could. I would appreciate the rolling reconnect with regard to depreciation and expensing those assets, because I do believe it's a powerful incentive for capital accumulation, which I don't think we can argue is a bad thing. So that's my caveat. I hope that is amended back into this bill. And you know, absent that, we would oppose the bill. If so, if you put it back in, then you know, be done with it. So that's my testimony, and I'll field any questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Schweinhardt, Associated Oregon Industries. We oppose this bill in the House, and we understand the situation. We understand why it's happening. We certainly understand that the problem that would happen if we were connected to it, if there were a huge cut at this point, or a huge tax cut at the federal level. But at this point, nobody knows. So we're willing to accept the fact that when this needs to be done. But having said that, we also think it's important to focus then on economic development at the state level. In the Economic Development Department, as somebody said earlier, we're at 7.6% unemployment. The February report put out by the Department of Employment in Oregon said that the economy is at the same level as last year. That was in February. In March, they said Oregon's economy weakens. Last week, Oregon lost over 1,000 jobs. Today, the Weyerhaeuser CEO came out with a statement their industry is in a real struggle. My point being here and trying to make this as short as possible is that Oregon needs help. They really do. We are in serious trouble here. Today, down the hall, Economic Development testified that when it comes to recruiting new business, and the way they put it was that they have a very small toolbox when recruiting new business compared to other states, and that we are falling farther behind. Now, I am hopeful that this committee, when the time comes, will consider those bills and programs and support legislation that shows support for increasing the amount of investment being made in Oregon, removing disincentives, and increasing the employment picture, such as the R&D tax credits and reducing capital gains. This would help Oregon directly. And business out there is hurting. They talk about government hurting. Business is hurting. One of the statistics put out by LRO indicated there's over 15,000 businesses that did not make a profit. Many, many more of those are marginal. Economic stimulus, as they're trying to do at the federal level, is the answer, not raising taxes. It's also interesting to understand, and particularly in light of what happened this morning, the announcement, it's my understanding it's about $1 billion that was either added to the budget or, depending on how you look at it, to pay for the federal employees' pay raises over the next biennium. It takes about $1 billion. Understandable. We're going to need another $1 billion the next biennium. Now, if you just take that $1 billion that's needed for next biennium, that means we've got to have our revenues increased by minimum of 12%.
Are you talking state employees?
State
employees.
You're going to need about 12%. The economy is going to have to grow. And in order for that to grow, we've got to have business grow. We've got to have the state economy grow. And I hope that you all, when you start to consider those bills come forward, to try to do something to help Oregon directly and growing and providing the tax revenue needed for the state in the next biennium. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe, I would just say we have definitely looked at stimulative bills. I think we've heard a couple in this committee, and yeah. Know the House has heard a couple of them. So those are certainly on my table. But I would also add, and I think it was well depicted on the front page of the Oregonian today, an article about the state of our education, higher education system, the ability to attract and retain businesses with the constant diet of bad news that we're getting. And that's the balancing act, I think, that we're trying to make from the presentation we had 11 on the House floor to the bill up that we have today is how do you balance those two up? Proper stimulus, which I think is, should be on the table, and ensuring that we don't have any more articles like we did on the front page of the Oregonian today.
Mr. Chairman, no question. We definitely support education. We want to get the state back on its feet, and we think we not only have to look short-term, but we have to look long-term. Mm-hmm. And some type of economic stimulus is needed because we are at the bottom rung right now,
yeah.
And we need to dig our own way out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Hannon, did you have...
No.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Rob, do you want to add anything? We'll have this bill back next week if the CPAs are home from Florida and Hawaii and Palm Springs and
Palmsville.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. Joan and I have had the pleasure of representing that association for 25 years, and it has been a pleasure. Legislative revenue, Department of Revenue, and the House have worked very, very hard on House Bill 2186, but as we know, there's still some technical work to be done to get it right. You have our commitment from the State Society of CPAs that we will continue to be a resource. Whether you go back to rolling reconnect or disconnect as of a specific date, whatever the committee's pleasure is, we will continue to come back to you, describe what the federal changes are, how they affect the state general fund, and try and help you work your way through that. I look forward to next week when the CPAs are here to actually talk about the bill in detail. But this is an ongoing commitment, regardless of which path you take.
You know, I think I'd like to do that next week. Partly, this is my first time on revenue, and I think I would benefit from it. But I think I'd like to do that. Is have the CPAs come in. So we'll schedule it. We'll work with you to schedule up a time that we can do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? House Bill 2186. Close the public hearing and.